Hey guys, Jacob Wynn here. Welcome to Wide World of Punting, episode 7, where we talk about everything and anything in the world of punting. So for you tonight, I've got Tristan from Top Sport with Behind Bookie Lines segment, and this is an epic one. He's talking about $1 million payouts they've had. Someone had a multi this year, $3,000 to win $1.5 million, came down to the final leg. He talks about that one. Someone else, over $1 million for the Chiefs to win the Super Bowl last season, and other times where people have put like $1 million on a single game. So it's a crazy chat. And then I've got Andrew Lauder, who's going to talk to me about Big Bash betting from a statistical standpoint. He's got a really interesting method, and he shares a bit of his secrets to his success from last season, and he's going to be tipping it again. But first, let's recap the Wide World Bet of the Week from last week. We had another win, so now we're on a bit of a roll here. And since we've partnered up with Top Sport, we're 2 for 2, both paying $3.50. And I took India. The theme of last week's pod was betting against your country sometimes to find value. And hey, it started a bit dicey. They batted first. It wasn't looking good. I saw a few comments rolling in of what a average tip that was, but they got enough runs on the board. It seems to be the case in cricket. If you get enough on the board, you're always in the game. And Australia fell apart a little bit. We covered, I think India won by 11 over, so that was very nice. Yet another winner. I will just say, if I ever go badly, I'm going to tell you guys, look, you know, variance will happen, and you know, losing streaks are inevitable, and you've just got to stick to your process. If I'm ever having a winning streak, I need to kind of do the opposite and pump the brakes and tell you guys I'm not going to be able to do this every week. You know, in the NFL yesterday, we cashed a multi at 12-1. The day before, a multi at 9-1. The week before, a multi at 8-1. So I'm on a crazy winning streak with NFL multis and the Wide World Bets of the Week. But I just want you to think, like, even though the temptation's going to be there to, you know, definitely jump on and to put a bit more money on, and if you've been winning, you can reasonably up your stake size. But I always say, don't bet more because you wish you got on the last bet. You know, just because the last bet wins and you go, I wish I'd put more on that, or I wish I was on that, I'll make up for it with the next one. That's just not how it works. You know, any bets you've missed out on, or you didn't put as much as you wish you did in the past, are now gone. And it's all about applying yourself and putting that same stake that you're comfortable with. So if you're a $20 bettor on the Wide World Bet of the Week and you like the tip I'm going to share at the end of this show, just stick to your $20 on it, because there's absolutely no guarantee. And I'm not an expert in the sport that I'm tipping, but I am trying to show how I can apply my punting knowledge to find edges across the world of punting. Let's get into Behind Bookie Lines with Tristan. Awesome chat about $1 million bets. I know that if we lose a couple in a row, you won't rub it in our faces, so I'm not going to do the same to you. And I know pride comes before a fall as well, but it has been a dream start for anyone who jumped on Top Sport and is following the tripod tips the last fortnight. And I thought, you know, you said you don't ban any winners, so we thought we'll put that to the test. But that brings up today's topic. We want to talk about bookmaker liability and your experiences. So before we talk about, like, you've got some cool stories of the biggest multi payouts that you've had to face, or just taking like 7-figure bets. But can we start with a bit of context? Can you describe for people just how big of a bookmaker is Top Sport? Whatever metrics you can best describe, how big are you guys?
Yeah, it's a tricky question to answer categorically, because obviously I'm not 100% sure how big the other operators are. You know, like from our end, obviously there's that big four or five. We got the Tab, Sportsbet, GVC, and Bet365 are probably the top four that take up a lot of the market share. So I guess as we've sort of touched on over the last couple of weeks, we've been around for a little while, about 15 years now online, and we've been just growing steadily with our bigger crew of professional punters, the top end sort of value. So like on our figures, we hold about 20 million a week. To 20 million a week. So it gets our figures up there to sort of put us in that sort of realm of around that $1 billion turnover for the year. But I do know for a fact that we don't have anywhere near as many customers as the bigger guys, which I think allows us to really service our existing group a lot better. But what it means is, by holding that sort of significant number, it means that our average bet size is a lot bigger than virtually anyone else, I'd say, in the marketplace. We pride ourselves on taking a bet. Obviously, you guys have had a bit of a run over the last couple of weeks, and, you know, good luck to you. Like that. And it's been fair play. You know, like, the bets have been picked out. There's, you know, you've done your form, you've just picked a couple of things and you're beating us. So that's our mantra. We want to take on punters. We want to, you know, have a fair fight. And if you guys are too good for us, or anyone's too good for us, we're going to front up the next day and we're going to do our best. So I guess that's our, you know, where we sit in the marketplace. I'm not sure where that places us. I would sort of say we're probably just behind that top tier group of the big turnover guys. But we've grown from a smaller operator to we're really trying to grow things out. And I feel in probably a year's time, well, hopefully we're going to be sort of, you know, knocking on the door of that sort of bigger group in the next year, 2 years. But the big thing from us is we're going to maintain the, you know, I guess the integrity of how we operate. We're always going to continue to take a sizable bet no matter how eventually big we get, you know, and I think that's important for the punters to know. So.
Well, it makes me feel a little bit better. Like you said last week, about 20,000 was on the Wide World bet of the week. So it won $3.50. So that's 40, 50,000 probably paying out. But if you've got a billion turnover, that's only a, you know, relatively small drop in the ocean. But I should clarify for people, of course, turnover is not profit. So, you know, someone could chuck $100 in their account on a Saturday and bet racing and they could bet all day. At the end of the day, they might have $50 in there, but they could have easily turned over $1,000, you know, whatever, because they would have won some and lost some, just to give people some idea. But today we're going to talk about not that bloke that's chucking, you know, $50 here and there on racing, but some of the big ballers and some of the people that have gone a bit larger. And I think we're going to start with a crazy one you told me about, which was a multi where you stood to pay out $1.4 million.
Yeah, so sometimes the context of the story is just as important as the actual facts, and this was one of those days. It was very rarely in our office things get a bit hectic, but we had this day in the middle of the year this year where we were notified the power was going to switch off, and so we had to get generators in. It was just one of those days where you're just hoping you get through, and it was all going to plan. We were operating on a little generator. It was a bit of a nightmare throughout the day, but all was good, and then they came and they said, all right, it's coming back on. So we were going to be without our whole set of computers for a 5-minute window, so I jumped onto the little portable one, and I was just manning the ship for this little 5-minute window. And a multi came through, which it came just as this Adelaide race was jumping. It was a 3,000 multi, which I sort of half looked at, but I had a heap of bets on the screen. So I just popped it in. Didn't really think too much of it at the time. And then two or three legs into the multi, when I looked at it retrospectively, I started to see our liability sort of start to build up on a few of these events. And it was a 7-leg multi when we look back on it a little bit deeper. There were four horse racing events, should I say, 3 AFL events. And the customer had 6 out of the first 7 legs in. And by the time we got to the Western Bulldogs North Melbourne game, I was a little bit nervous because there was a $1.5 million liability on that multi, and the customer had 6 out of the 7 events already ticked off. So there was a massive sweat on that last game. It was a bit frantic the last sort of 10, 15 minutes before the game, because we do pride ourselves on taking big bets. We it's something we are proud of, but obviously we don't just sit there and go down with the ship with the entire amount. Like, as a bookmaker, you have to manage your risk. You have to manage your liability. We have a number we're prepared to work for every game. And when we resulted the second last leg, all of a sudden the Bulldogs 1-39 liability was well outside of our comfort zone. And like any smart punter, he's a very shrewd bloke. The guy that had the bet, he actually made a book for himself. He took the 40-plus option. He took the Kangaroos to win and the draw. So he put himself in a position where for his 3,000, I think he was guaranteed to win 300K. But if it fell in the middle, he was going to get the nice big payday of around about that $1.4 million. And at halftime, it was a very nerve-wracking watch, because it was a 20-point margin at halftime to the Bulldogs. So I was sitting right in that, you know, probably the worst spot you can sit from our point of view, because had to get another 20 points to go 40 plus, or if the Kangaroos to come back, it was another 20 points. But luckily from our end, they end up winning by 50. So we dodged a bullet there. It was probably something that I've had far easier $3,000 collects than sort of sweating a $1.4 million payout. But, you know, on the plus side to the customer, he had a good result too. And that was something we love seeing, that, like, you know, if punters are going to have a crack at the multis, no, it's great. And eventually you're going to end up on the wrong side of that. So, it was a good, exciting night in the office, and there was no real damage done at the end of the day.
So when you saw it coming through, because I was wondering your process, but you said you're a bit frantic, but basically you've just seen $3,000 on, it must have been 400 or 500 to 1. So yeah, when you've seen that, it hasn't rung alarm bells with you that it's anything that you need to, like, dive into, because typically you're not too worried about multis at that kind of odds.
Oh, you normally would be. I guess the thing that, as I said, through myself personally, I can't even throw anyone else clicked it off. But sometimes from our end, when you're taking liability on horses, when he had tote product, top flat product, and these sort of things, you don't actually know what the true price is. So
right.
I saw a tote, Herald tote odds and top flat odds and these sort of things. And then we had some AFL games where they were 1-39 margins, and it sort of all looked like they were going to be, No, obviously it was going to be a big payout. We knew if the seven legs lob, but I didn't think it was up near that sort of stratosphere. And it was a place option as well. So it was one of those, it's a difficult thing, and they're split second decisions you've got to make, particularly when you've got a race jumping. And in hindsight, if we had the option or we had to handle things a little bit differently, maybe you might have limited it to 1,500 or 2,000 to put it around about that $1 million mark, which is probably more so what we would have been comfortable standing things for. But we took the bet. We obviously would have honoured it if it won, and we had to manage it. So I think that as a bookmaker or as a bookmaker in our style, you have to, once you take the bet, you have to say, okay, how am I going to manage this? And for bets that are 3,000, we treat multis individually. So if someone has a seven leg multi and the first leg's $2, then we treat the first bet as 3,000 on a $2 shot, right, which is obviously isn't a problem.
Yep.
Then once that one wins, say it's another $2 shot, we've got 6,000 on a $2 shot, which again isn't a problem. But then as they mount up, then all of a sudden your fifth, your sixth, your seventh leg are very dangerous.
Are you talking about offloading the liability? Are you talking about laying those final couple of legs? Because you, like, essentially, I'm just guessing that. So you essentially had like 600 grand riding on that final bet. So are you like finding other bookies that will lay like any other result?
Yeah, so well, just to clarify on this, it was an AFL game, so it was that 1-39 margin. I think it was around about the $2 mark. So I think from hindsight, we had a liability of around about 600,000 or 700,000 in that spot. Now, unfortunately, it's just the reality of the marketplace at the moment. It's impossible for us to go and bet that back into the market. It just doesn't happen. So we did put a little bit back into the market. We were able to manage a little bit of it, but it certainly wasn't anywhere near what we needed to. So we then inflated the odds about the 40 plus. We inflated the odds about the Kangaroos. So what that did for the punters, and that's why I think it'll be interesting for your listeners, because when bookmakers like us, and there's a few other bookmakers out there that take on these sort of sizable bets, you then have to put yourself in a position where you're offering great value about a side that not necessarily should be that price. So the 40 plus probably was around about the 230 price, I think, it might have been about $3 something in the market. Mm-hmm. We went 20 or 30 cents above the market. We went above the lay side of Betfair, because we knew we needed to lay that. We went high on the Kangaroos side. So there are a lot of punters getting enormous value about that. And that's,
and you would have dropped your Bulldogs 1-39, because that's the last thing you needed to soak up any more money on.
Exactly. Yeah, we were trying to get right out of the way of that. And obviously then to make sure our market percentage is still, you know, attractive, we needed to really push the other option. So that's one of the skills of bookmaking, being able to, when you're in those awkward positions, to be able to manage it in a way that gives the punters value if they wanted to oppose it, but also protects us and also allows us to take on those big bets. So,
and the other thing I was wondering would be, like, wouldn't you have offered the punter a manual cash out? Although you said that you basically let him back all the other possibilities, which essentially is a form of giving him a cash out, where he's giving you back some of his profit, but he's ensuring that he was going to make a good amount of money.
Yeah, so we're actually very close to launching cash out on the website. It's not quite there yet, as I'm sure you and all the other punters know. We've got the formula in place, so we were able to work that out. He, though, didn't really – I think he was very bullish on the Bulldogs, so he didn't want to just skew a cash out. He wanted to skew his position, so he was much better about the 1-39. Then I think he made his second-best option, the 40-plus, which is where it lobbed, and then he basically just then backed the Kangaroos to break square on the multi. So – He handled it very, very well. It was true. He didn't just hit the cash out button and given himself a green book, so to speak. He put himself in a position where he sort of skewed it in the way that he wanted to be positioned, which was a good way to do it. It was, you know, we discussed the options, like it was a big liability from both ends. Like, you know, he doesn't have those sort of multis running around for that number all the time. So he was excited, and we had a chat about, you know, I was open with him. I actually provided him with the numbers and said, these are, you know, if you do this, you do this, these will be your positions. And like, he's one of our good customers, so we wanted to make sure that if he was to hit that big number, he was happy with it. If he just missed, he was still in a position where he was happy with the outcome too. So it was good, but it's those sort of, you know, you've got 15 minutes to be able to make a tough call where there's a lot of, you know, big numbers flying around, and I think we handled it well in retrospect. The fifth leg, it was the I remember it vividly to this day. It was the Suns against the Cats, and he took the line at, this is another interesting part of the story, he took the 40 plus in that game, and at halftime the line was already out to 46.5, and he's taken the plus 46.5 at halftime to cover himself in the fifth leg, and it's fallen on 42. So he's got both results up in that. So it was one of those. It was a very sickening, very quiet, subdued office where I know you were talking at the start of the show, would we still be happy after the little run you guys have got on? But I can assure you, it was a lot quieter in the office on that Saturday night than what it was after India cleaned us up on during the week last week.
Shall we move on? Another one you told me, someone dropped 150 grand on actually a bet that I also was on last season, and they got $7.50 about the Kansas City Chiefs to win. The Super Bowl was actually played in 2020, but last NFL season, I'll sneak my humble brag in there, I got them at 11-1. Didn't quite have 150K on them. But what was the process behind that one?
Yeah, so it was one of our punters. He's a big Kansas fan. I can't remember the exact moment of when he backed. I think it was early in the season, maybe 4 or 5 weeks in. And he's had 100K originally. Then he's had another 50,000 after that. So he had 150,000 at 750 on Kansas to win the Super Bowl. And from our end, probably 2 weeks later, Patrick Mahomes went down with an injury. So we were sort of sitting pretty with what we thought we were in a decent position. We had to lay off a little bit of it. We tried to lay a few other options at the time. It's a little bit different handling a futures bet like that, because you have to sort of put yourself in a position where you're comfortable with your stand once you take that bet, because 2 weeks later, the odds can significantly drop or they can significantly increase as they did in this situation. Now, my mentality, and all bookmakers, all punters have different sort of mindsets and mentality on how they handle situations. Could you not have then gone and, you know, offloaded the liability and basically put yourself in a no-lose position? And that's not really my style. You know, for my end, like we were happy standing the option for our maximum stand at the $7.50. So when they drift out to $15, like why would we be wanting to, in my opinion, pass money back on an option that now is less likely to win in the market's position, in our opinion, everyone's opinion, when the quarterback goes down. So just one of those things. They get on a run. We all know their playoff run. They were in a lot of trouble in a lot of games. To add a bit of meat to the story as well, he actually also had a couple of big cracks at the AFC winner. So it sort of compounded the issue. He might have had 200,000 at around about the $3.50 average price on them to win the AFC. So it made for an ugly old NFL postseason. But they're the sort of bet you like laying in those big events, the big liquid markets where, you know, everything's on the line. You love taking a bet like that. He's butted up again on them this year, so we've got another scary old book trying to get Kansas beat. But you know, as I said, like those, and I guess to put a bit of perspective out there to the list, different from our end, taking, you know, your big numbers on very liquid markets like an AFL or an NFL, as opposed to, you know, an ITF tennis game. So that's where, as a bookmaker, you've got to make your assessment on how much you're willing to take, what the liability you're willing to have on the market once it's all said and done. And then if the bet is too big for what we're comfortable holding for, are we able to either manage it by betting it back into the marketplace, or are we able to take bets on other options to be able to put ourselves into a comfortable position? Put us in a really awkward spot for the Super Bowl, because, you know, then you're in a position where, you know, what do? Do you lay the other side? Do you go again on Kansas? You know, you don't want to get stuck in the middle if you lay the plus. So that's, again, a tricky spot. We decided probably incorrectly in hindsight to push Kansas again. I was of that mentality that, you know, we've probably got to go down with a ship here. We've got to go again on that book. And unfortunately, aggression didn't favour the brave on that instance. But again, it was a great bet, and well done to him.
And so just for someone to do a quick maths, 150K at $7.50, that's over $1 million payout. And what you were outlining there about offloading liability, and that you when their odds got further out, because you're right, Mahomes had like a dislocated knee. Missed about a month of the season, and they fell behind, and it didn't look like they were going to get a top seed, which would have made their path a lot more difficult. And the reason you said, look, I'd rather have a big bet on at not great odds, because in the long run, it's going to profit for you more than you're going to lose. That's like, you're making the exact case why I always tell people, don't jump so quickly to cash out. You've got yourself in a good position. Don't give the profit back to the other person. But just to outline that season as well, KC, when Mahomes got back, they went on a run. They didn't lose again. Week 17, the Patriots were upset, which then catapulted the Chiefs into the bye. So they got a week off, but then they were down 24-0, I think, in the divisional round of the playoffs. Came back and won that game by double digits, down, I think, 10 in the title game to the Titans, but again rolled them, and down 10 in the fourth quarter of the Super Bowl as well to top it all off. So, and this bloke, he didn't cash out. He didn't bet the other side either. He collected $1 million.
He stayed the path. He didn't do anything with us anyway.
But what about any other massive like single bets that come to mind? Has anyone ever loaded up like millions on a favorite or something like that?
Yeah. We you know, like it doesn't happen every day of the week, but there certainly would be, you know, a lot of months that go by where we've got $1 million bet on a BBL game or an IPL game or an EPL game, these sort of things. Like there's big numbers that fly around, and we're, as I said, we're known in the industry for taking those sort of actions. Now, as I pointed out, we're not going to do that on an ITF tennis game, but where we're comfortable, where the market's very solid, where we've got enough action to be able to lay the other side, we open the shoulders and we've got customers out there, and not regularly, but certainly over the course of a year, we'd probably have, I suppose, $10 million bets that come through on games where, you know, they're big events, and then we obviously then push out the other side, which gives our customers, you know, opportunities then to take value about the other side. I remember one, it was Christmas Eve actually last year, and it was a Sunday overnight, so it was all the NFL games that were in play. And I remember we were in a massive hole come the 5 o'clock games. We were down about $1.5 million on all the NFL early action. Then it swung, and it was just money flying around everywhere. There were massive bets on the cricket, I think there was three big bash games, 10 NFL games, and we would have had $3 or $4 million bets on that day. And it was amazing just the volatility. So made for a very stressful Christmas Eve. And I think we might have turned over $20 or $30 million on that day, and I think broke about square. But it's amazing how the numbers fly around, and we're not sitting there saying we're just gonna take $1 million bet, sit there, sweat it and watch it. We're gonna hold a good chunk of it, and we're gonna make sure we manage it to the level that we're comfortable with. But when you've got good liquidity in those markets with your Betfair and these sort of places, and your other clients that like to get involved, we can offer good prices. And we're just trying to bookmake to make a little percentage there, and also give ourselves a decent sweat at the same time. People say, oh, that must be a heavily losing customer or these sort of things. And I know it's sort of almost a tainted sort of thing when people say that. But for us, as long as the price is right, as long as we've got the ability to manage the situation, then we're very willing to take big bets off all sort of customers. Again, providing the situations that dictate it. So Melbourne Cup, we opened the shoulders. We let any single customer on to win 100K. You know, we had plenty of customers backing to win 200, 300 and all these sort of things. So that's something, going back to the first question you raised at the start of this chat. Even though we're not in that sort of stratosphere of your real top four clients with a bulk number of customers just yet, I'd say the numbers and the big bets that fly around certainly put us in that stratosphere.
And I'll just touch finally on the opportunity that presents for punters that you're talking about. Let's say an example, I hate to bring up India in the cricket again, but India versus Australia, 2020, let's just say the odds are $1.90 each side and someone throws $1 million on India and you accept it. Well, now you don't want much more money on India. So what you're talking about is what you'll do is raise the odds on the other side. And even though you probably felt it is a 50-50 and you were happy at $1.90, now you might roll like the other side out to probably close to $2, and you're still gonna be in a slightly profitable margin between the two. But it's an opportunity for anyone who sees value on the other side because they're kind of getting overs.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like in that exact scenario, if we were happy to take $1 million on India, then we would certainly believe that the true price is around that $1.90 mark. But then we would have to say, okay, well, what are we comfortable standing this event for? So we then make that determination. We'd say, okay, well, we've got a bet here to lose $900,000. Maybe we're comfortable letting this game go around for $500, for argument's sake. So then we've got to say, well, we've got to get $400,000 out of the other side. So how do we do that? We can either bet back India with the marketplace, $2, $205 about the other option, which again still gives us that little bit of margin. So what you've got to weigh up from a bookmaker's point of view, which I'm sure your listeners will find interesting, if we were to back that same option back at $1.90, we can go up to $2.10 to lay the opposing side to basically do the same thing. So, you know, you can give yourself a really aggressive sort of pricing point, and then it gives punters good value. It, you know, it enables turnover. In a nutshell, if you take a big bet, you work out how much you're prepared to stand something for, you tweak the odds, or you have to go to the market. And you sort of do a combination of both. You know, you'll move the price out to try to lay the other side. You might edge it out, and then there's plenty of punters out there that'll get get some good value, and then you might get some really really sharp action on the opposing side. We'll say, hey, I was originally wanting to stand this for $500,000. I'm quite confident now about the opposing side. I might elevate that to $600 or those sort of things. You use that market intel to say, okay, well, I sort of feel maybe it's a $1.95 chance we've laid the $1.90 at. So, you know, you're making decisions on the fly. You're making your original assessment, but then that can change as you tweak things going forward.
Well, this has been absolutely fascinating. And I think like information that not many people get kind of access to hear about some of these mind-blowing size bets and how you guys handle it on the other side. So again, really appreciate these insights for Behind Bookie Lines. Tristan, cheers, mate. Hope you guys enjoyed that chat as much as I did. Okay, next up, I've got Andrew Lauder, who's going to talk to me about his success betting on the Big Bash. One other thing I wanted to say relating to Andrew, and it's, you know, we've built up a group, an app with, I think, over 15,000 members and a group with over 20,000 members. And there's lots of sharp minds in there. And I, you know, I really don't want you guys to see me as thinking that I'm high and mighty or that I'm better than anybody else. The fact is that there's going to be lots of great tipsters in there that are going to come with a lot to offer and a lot to share. And among other things, I want to make this podcast for you, the people and the members in the group. But I also want it to be an opportunity to reward those that deserve to get a bit of recognition. So, I mean, if you're someone who follows along, you think you've got knowledge, you've got insight that you could share. I've had a lot of people reach out to me, which I really appreciate, offering support and saying, you know, they're happy to jump on the pod, they're happy to be interviewed, or they're happy to fill in for Alex. And I basically say the same thing to all of them, is that if you've got knowledge that you want to share, start by jumping in the group, contribute, you know, let the followers kind of get familiar with you, demonstrate your edge. And then you look, you know, so far in this series, and we've only had six episodes before tonight, I've had Jason Campbell, who I've really respected the way he shares his racing tips and his write-ups. We had Jake Humphreys, not only killed it with his tennis tips, but really showed great insight into how he was finding that value. We've got Andrew tonight, who just humbly went about his work last Big Bash series, you know, never asked for any kind of spotlight, went 63% on his total bets. Definitely going to get Nettie, who's killed it in the NFL this season, to jump on and talk some NFL with me in an upcoming show. And of course, Saul, who made a cameo appearance last week. I said, give me your best Champions League bet. He not only gives me a winning bet on that, but literally spells out exactly which teams are going to score and when. And it plays out exactly as he predicted. He gives his best Premier League bet, wins quite comfortably as well. He's announced he's going to be back tipping full-time in the Tripod group and gave a tip yesterday for Champions League that got up this morning as well. So shout out to Saul. And shout out to all the people that contribute great work in the group. You know, it's not a competition between tipsters. We all can help each other and make the group stronger. And as I said, I want, you know, if that interests anybody who's out there and they want to, you know, get involved and they want an opportunity to come on the pod, I want to allow you guys that opportunity. So just keep putting in the work and you will get noticed. 2020 Big Bash League, which starts up in Australia tomorrow. And it is a pretty good sport to punt on because there's a primetime game virtually every night. Andrew, his background is he's a mathematician. So I find his approach really interesting. You're going to hear all about how basically he just went to task, created himself a spreadsheet in a specific market, you know, narrowed his focus to see if he could beat the bookies. And he was really successful last season, nearly 50 tips, 63% win rate at average payout $1.88. So here's my chat with Andrew.
Yeah, I wanted to zero in on side markets, not the sharp markets that the bookies will have as, you know, your normal head-to-heads and your main lines. I wanted to zero in on the side markets where I felt bookies probably don't spend too much time on those markets because they might be low liquidity for them. They might only hold a certain amount of money either side of that book. So for me, it was if I could find something where I can get all the data I can get, research the crap out of it, and put it together in a way that would work for me, maybe I could do a better job of researching those side markets than what the bookies are even attempting to do. If I can try and find an edge, if I could find a consistent edge, then I know I've got something pretty good and I could see how it went throughout a season. But it was just picking one thing and one thing only and just focusing on that. And for me, it was the total boundaries market. I had the model set and it took me probably about 5 or 6 weeks to build it up to where I wanted it to be in preparation for game one of Big Bash last season. And it was just going to be something I was just going to do at home myself. I wasn't going to originally share it onto the Tripod group. I was just going to be something I kept to myself, try it for a year. And then if it was something good, then maybe the next season I'd put it up on the Tripod. And I thought, you know what, there's probably a few blokes actually in the group that like that kind of betting. They like that statistical approach. And I thought, bugger it, just for a bit of fun, I'll throw it up onto the group and say, look, boys, this is what I'm doing. This is what I've made. It's going to tell me the bets each week if I've got an edge or not on total boundaries markets. You can either tail along if you want or just sit back and watch and see how it goes. And a few blokes jumped on a few bets and they did well. And yeah, in the end, as you said, 63%, I was pretty happy with that.
And I'm just curious, I really want to dive into the model, but like, does it spit out one value, which is like a predicted average total boundaries, or like, or does it separate fours and sixes, or is it more like a probability distribution, so to speak, so that you could pick any number of boundaries and you'd have a rough estimation of what the probability is of hitting that number?
Yeah, exactly that last one you said, mate. So basically, once I've input all the data and I've got my matchup, so I've got my game coming up, it'll show me a table, and I'll have a table. So say it's total match fours, I'll have a table anywhere from, it's set at 18.5 right up to, I think, 34.5 I've got it set at the moment. And it never goes above that. I don't think it ever goes below that.
Yeah.
And it'll give me a calculation of what it thinks the chances are of each line getting hit. So say, for instance, it might be the line it might spit up. It might tell me that 24.5 is the fair line. So it's what should be paying $1.90. And it'll work upwards and downwards based off that. So when the actual line comes out with the bookies, if their line is 23.5 and it's $1.90 at the bookies, and I'm saying, oh, it's 24.5 where I've got it, and I'm like, well, I can base it off that whether it's a play or not. But that's pretty close.
Well, do you need to be have a big disparity between your number and what the bookies are pricing to make it worth betting? Because as you say, if you think 50-50 is $1.90, but you know, you need to win at least 53% of the time to make profit on $1.90. So is there, are you saying if you're at least one whole boundary different, that's enough of an edge?
Yeah, it comes down to two things there. So when it's that close, if it's only a point difference, it can come down to the price, because sometimes you'll find some bookies will have a line at $1.97, and I've seen ones where it might be $2.10 on one side, and that's the side I want to take. And I go, well, I'm getting great value here, even though I've only got 1 point of difference. The value is just too good to pass up. And sometimes I'll take it. If the money's not there, then it's just a pass and move on to the next game.
That makes sense. Did you find there was a lot of variance across the bookies? Because that would be an advantage to you as well, that if, you know, if the different bookies are setting their numbers and they're not all the same and not all the same prices, then depending whether you want to go over or under, you can shop around for the best.
I found the total match fours, they all had basically the same numbers, but the prices would change. Mm-hmm. So most across the board were $1.88, $1.90, and then you'd find one that might be $1.97 or something like that. Total match sixes were ones where I found a few bookies were quite different, even to the maybe like 3 points. So you might have one that would have under over 10.5 total sixes. The other one might be 13.5.
That's massive. And then obviously you almost like don't even need a model. You can just about middle that if you're just shopping it. And it just goes to show the strength of shopping around. Right. So but back to the model, right? I know you don't want to give away all your kind of in-house secrets, and that's fair enough. But can you talk a little bit more about building it? Like it's obviously you must have put in a lot of historical information, and you must like just talk about what factors are in your model, because obviously they're all factors that you believe determine the number of boundaries that get hit in a game.
Yeah, that was it was the most time consuming part, was scraping the internet trying to find as much data as I could. So we're talking team histories individually as a team matchups, ground data. Then you start getting into your player data as well. There was a lot of scouring the internet, trying to find as much data as I could. And luckily I found a lot of it in one place, but there were parts of it where I had to go back through every single game from the previous season and look at all scorecards and get everything off the scorecards that I needed.
That's dedication. So you mentioned, I didn't know if you would have included players. Like if I had to guess, I would have thought you'd look at each team and how many boundaries do they hit per match, and then you could also look at how many do they concede, you know, and you're getting a rough idea on average. A Chris Lynn is out for the Heat. Does that change your prediction?
Yeah, so I suppose that's the thing with, if you're creating your own model at home, you can either make it as simple as you want or you can make it as in-depth as you want. You can go right down to the nitty-gritty. when it came to player data, I didn't want to delve too deep in it because I knew how time consuming it would be. So the way I worked it was two best batters, two best bowlers in the key matchups for a game. And I would give them a points rating. This is on a separate spreadsheet to my original one. And it would spit out a rating of anywhere between -2 and +2. So that was how much more over what my original calculation was saying it would be. So if I was saying my original calculation was saying, 26.5 total match fours, and I'm getting a +2 on my player matchups, I'm going to add 2 to that line, and that's going to be my perceived true line. And then if it was -2, that would say that it's going to be swinging to the bowler's favour, and then I'd take 2 off the original line that I was getting.
That's fascinating. That makes sense to me. The equivalent in NRL would be I've got my Penrith Panthers, I've got their team power rating, and that's how I'm going to price them in a handicap. But then within that, you know, if I had this, and I haven't got a spreadsheet for NRL players, but you know, if you went along that path, it'd be like Nathan Cleary is worth 3.5 points, you know, to his team's value. So then if he was in or out, you could subtract that, and now you're trying to get a more correct number. I want to know about the washouts and when you lose overs, and maybe different bookies result this differently, but you've probably experienced it all last summer. Because I'm wondering where the games where they play a reduced number of overs, like 18 instead of 20, but do they still classify that as a completed match, and it's bad luck if you bet overs on boundaries in that?
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure across all bookies, don't quote me on it, but I'm pretty sure across all bookies, if there's a reduction of over 20% of the overs, of the total overs, then all the bets are void. It's just a push, get your money back.
Right.
So that would be 4 overs per innings from memory. But there was a couple of games where there were reduced overs. And from memory, they did go unders. So if you've got wet weather predicted and you're already leaning on the unders already as it is, then it makes it an even better play because there's a chance that there could be a little bit of a shower through the game. They're going to halt the game up and go, oh, boys, we're going to cut an over out of each side or an even 2 or 3 overs. You're still on. You're looking even better.
I love that because that's what I would call a free roll where your model says you should play unders in this. You're seeing a bit of rain. Now, look, if the rain hammers down and the game is, you know, is a washout or they play 15 overs or less each, well, you didn't lose. You got your money back. But there is that chance that, like, your model's based on 20 overs, but there's that chance, obviously, that there could be somewhere from 16 to 19 overs played. And that also doesn't guarantee you're going to win. But, you know, if they're seeing a 10% reduction in deliveries they're facing, then that's, you know, probably directly a 10% edge you're picking up there, and you've got nothing to lose because you can't go over 20 overs. I'll tell you something I picked up on a year or two ago, but I don't think you can still do this. They used to have a run total for every team, like, you know, team A is playing team B and their over under would be like 170, right? But you could find out who won the toss, and you could bet on the team that was batting second under. And that was a big advantage because they would always be limited by what the first team made. So if the first team went under, you'd sometimes have a bet they couldn't possibly lose. Even if the first team didn't go under, you still were like 50-50 to win the second bet. But I think I've seen the bookies have taken away like some of those total markets once the toss comes out, or they've put in a clause only applies if bat first. And now this is not your expertise, but obviously you follow it closely. So like looking at the teams, is any team kind of jumping out at you? I don't know if you've looked at the futures odds or just the teams that you think should go well this season.
Yeah, it's funny. I love watching Big Bash. I don't have a team that I follow or anything, but I like Brisbane Heat. I think they've underperformed for many years now. I think they're probably due. They've had a couple of good signings.
So I assure you, I didn't just cut Andrew off there. I thanked him very much for his time and sharing his methods and how he has approached betting on the Big Bash. And that's an approach anybody can take really in any market. If you're willing to dedicate time and you're willing to put in more time and effort into a specific avenue more than the bookies can do, you can find an edge and you can follow Andrew. He's going to be sharing all his Big Bash totals in the Tripod group and in the Tripod app under the name Big Bash Betting. And the reason I jumped straight in on my own here is because I'm going to piggyback on his last point there, that he likes the Brisbane Heat, because that's going to be my Wide World bet of the week for this week. And as you know, last week we got up with India. We're going to go back to the well with the identical market. We're going to take the Brisbane Heat as an underdog on Friday night. They're playing the Melbourne Stars. It's actually not even in Melbourne. It's in ACT. So no home ground advantage for the Stars. And it's, again, just a very simple handicap. I'm no expert in Big Bash cricket, certainly, but we've got a game that, you know, has every chance to be very close. But we're going to get a nice juicy $3.50 on the underdog, -2.5 wickets and -6.5 runs. And remember, they don't have to win by both those. It's one or the other. If they chase, they've got to have 3 wickets or more in hand when they have a successful run chase. If they set the total, they've got to defend it by more than 6 runs, as India did for us last week. And for me, living in Brisbane for many years, I know for sure the Brisbane Heat have underperformed countless times. So let's hope they get it together and have a big season and kick things off with extending the Wide World Bet of the Week win streak. So that'll do it for another episode of Wide World of Punting. Thank you to Tristan. Thank you to Andrew again. Big Bash actually starts up tomorrow night. But as I said, the Worldwide Bet of the Week is the Friday night game. And then Saturday, of course, at noon, I've got the NFL preview week 14. Things are hotting up with just 3 regular season weeks left. Back up to 58% winners on that. And a crazy plus 80 units across all the multis we've given out in NFL season 2020. So hope to see you there for a short NFL preview on Saturday. But if not, this time next week for Wide World of Punting episode 8. As always, gamble responsibly. Legal.